KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Last week was the first anniversary of Freddie Gray's death while in custody of the Baltimore Police Department. KBOO's Doug McVeigh was in Baltimore this week and talked with Gray's family attorney, William Murphy Jr., to find out the latest in the story and how it continues to impact communities around the nation.
Since the murder of Freddie Gray and the uprisings, and we've had the growth of Black Lives Matter and politicians paying amazing amounts of lip service to what needs to be done. It's been a year out. What's changed?
Nothing's changed, which means that, in fact, things have changed for the worse because the cycle of poverty gets worse all by itself, and only 10% of the people in poverty ever get out of it. And so unless you do something radical to reverse poverty, it's here to stay. And none of the politicians up to this point in time in Baltimore have put a dent in it because it's gotten progressively worse from the time that we had Mayor Schaefer to the time that we had Mayor Blake. So it's a sorry lack of effort, A, and B, it's a lack of intellectual effort to come up with the solutions to this problem, and we ought to be able to do it. We ought to be able to solve it. And these kids are at risk because as long as we have poverty, we have kids who are not taught what they need to know about the world, about themselves. And so that's why they remain in poverty and they remain a drag on the economy. Nobody wants to have to subsidize anybody. And if we ignore the problems of people, that's exactly what we'll end up doing. They need great schools. They need great homes. They need the great neighborhoods like we had. That's why we flowered, you know, and you don't have that stuff. The arrogant among us think, well, we did it ourselves. No, we didn't. This was a village that nurtured us. But when that village is no longer either a village or nurturing, then these kids raise themselves and the results are always, always very, very bad. And don't point to the few that get out as an excuse to not do anything about the overwhelming number of people who don't. And that's what the Republicans do. They blame it all on the kids. You know, it's not a kid's fault that, you know, he doesn't have parents. And then they blame it all on the parents. Well, if you've got mass incarceration, you know, one of the parents is going to be away for a long, long time. And so then you got a mother who's left doing it all by herself. And if she came up in poverty, she doesn't have the education to break out of it. And the cycle goes on and on and on. It worsens and it worsens and it worsens. So that's what's happened since Freddie Gray died. And by the way, I was Freddie Gray's family's lawyer.
How are the cases going?
I handled this personal injury case, and we settled that for $6.4 million. I'm not involved in any way greater than you in the criminal cases. I've been a commentator about them because, you know, I was a criminal lawyer for a long time. And I represented people charged with crime. And, you know, for about 29 years. Then I was on the bench here for about 3 years on the circuit court. And I can tell you that our criminal justice system is part of the mass incarceration machine. And we didn't really have an awareness of it the way we should have for years and years. And then when we got an awareness beginning around 1995, when the data was overwhelming and the trends were clear, nobody did anything about it. And it took the Freddie Gray case for the legislature to pass the most comprehensive package of sentencing reforms in the history of Maryland this past session. So they reacted by doing something. But nothing like that's happened in Baltimore City, where it's largely business as usual. You know, sympathy without empathy, without a programmatic response to stop what's going on.
I've noticed that personally, and the people I interact with, every time something happens, everyone trots out their best sympathy faces and they say a lot of great things and make a lot of promises, and then jack all happens and we're back to where we were before. And myself and for a lot of people, we're just getting tired of that. It's like we're done with We're done with saying thank you so much for saying something that wasn't screwed up and accepting the fact that nothing happens after that. Is that becoming more typical?
It's always been the rule, especially with liberals. You know, they are some really great liberals who roll their sleeves up and actually try to do the work in a hands-on way, or they do the work in a theoretical way as guides for the rest of us. But most people at Goodwill just look over the edge of the cliff and they see us down in this bomb crater. And they don't come down. They say, oh, look at that. That's so bad. And they go on about their business. Many of them are great people. But they just don't care enough about what's happening in that bomb crater to join us or to guide us or to reach down and pull us out or anything. And so this becomes an independent entity. West Baltimore, East Baltimore, poverty, violence, drugs, families disappearing, men disappearing. You know, it's not enough to talk about it. You got to roll your sleeves up. This is our city. We got to roll our sleeves up and solve that problem so this can become an extraordinary city, not just a good city. And we have that potential, but people have got to stop what they're doing and do something differently. They can't just talk. They can't just sympathize. That really doesn't move the ball forward.
Do you think that the Black Lives Matter movement and the everything since the murder of Freddie Gray and the media finally paying attention, how has that influenced drug policy debate that's going on, the way we talk about these things?
Well, the Black Lives movement is in its infancy. It started essentially in Ferguson. And it's kids, you know, youngsters. And all they're good at so far is disruption. And that's a great thing because, you know, when you ask questions in embarrassing circumstances to politicians who have never been prepared to give those answers, you kind of expose them. And they get angry because they've been exposed. And the rest of us go, oh, my God, he didn't know. Or she didn't know. Wow. And so they serve a vital function. And as they get more and more sophisticated, they're going to play a more effective role in this movement. And my hat's off to them for doing what they've done so far.
You have some thoughts for listeners. This is going to be on radio station KBOO in Portland, Oregon. It's a majority white city. It's horribly segregated. We have a long history of police violence and brutality against people of color and also against people with disabilities, mental and occasionally physical. It's a city that's, on the other hand, very, very progressive and liberal and hates the fact that it's really as screwed up as it is. Any advice for places like that?
I have a lot of faith in today's young people. They seem to be disconnected from the old ways, and that's good. But sometimes they're a little too disconnected because they don't read about the old ways. They don't understand how we got here. And for them, just go back and read about Richard Nixon and what he did to join the bigotry of the South into the Republican Party. It was called the Southern Strategy. Remember that the Republicans had the majority of the votes for the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65, which revolutionized the American South, but it didn't change many minds. And then Richard Nixon came along in order to beat a really, really great progressive leader, Hubert Humphrey, who was President Johnson's vice president. He came up with that Southern strategy to get all of the arch segregationists, all of the overt bigots, all of the overt racists who were in charge of every Southern state, all of that leadership, U.S. senators, congresspersons, governors, legislators, completely racist bunch. He invited them to join the Republican Party as their new home. He didn't want them there so that he could subject them to a re-education. He brought them there to accommodate their racism. And since 68, the Republicans have two general philosophies. One, let's do everything corporate America wants. And number two, let's keep people divided in the South and wherever else we can divide them on the basis of the color of their skin so that they can be easily manipulated. And that's what you've seen over the past many, many years. So Republicans ought to understand that, and they don't. And they ought to understand why that's been the home of racism ever since 1968, and they won't. And so Republicans need to know that every time that they vote for saving taxes, they're stuck with the whole agenda, that whole racist agenda. And you see it manifesting in Donald Trump today. You see it manifesting in Ted Cruz. These are two men who've never done anything to solve the problem created by racism in America, to solve the problems of poverty, this, that, and the other. You got one who's a narcissist and the other who is just a calculating, miserable human being. And so we have a choice between those two on the Republican side, and the Republicans only have themselves to blame because they've nurtured this racism. They've kept it going ever since 1968. So, you know, vote Democratic. And that's the only chance we have to make real reform in the country. You know, Hillary Clinton may not be everything everybody wants, but look at the alternatives. My God, the alternatives will take us back so far to the ugliness of the past, to the place where people really had it even worse than they have it today. And we can't regress. This is a progressive country. We are the leaders of where the rest of the world should be going. And we can't go back to the old racism. We can't go back to xenophobia. We have to reach out and set an example as a country of what great values are all about, where everybody is welcome, everybody has a chance for opportunity, and to each according to his needs, hopefully, and his abilities.
I would ask you which one is the narcissist and which one is the calculating one, but I think we could make arguments for either. But
I left it deliberately vague. You can pick the one you want, or you can choose both.
Do you see other parallels in terms of the Nixon himself and the Nixon years with the way politics are going? It's that, you know, remember that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. However, that saying.
Look, despite his criminality and his racism and his anti-Semitism and his anti-hippieism and his anti-war protesterism, he was a much more progressive figure, Richard Nixon, than anything these current Republicans have to offer. So these current people are worse than Nixon by a factor of 100, probably. You know, Nixon was in favor of opening negotiations with China, and the Republicans and the Democrats both didn't want to do that. And you see, you have to talk to your opponents. You have to talk to your future enemies or your present enemies, because sometimes they're enemies out of a sense of profound misunderstanding of who we are. And likewise, on our side, we can misunderstand. He was in favor of universal health care. My God. He understood the importance of foreign policy. But he was an evil man. And we all know that the war on drugs started because he wanted to destabilize three communities. He wanted to destabilize anti-war protesters, hippies, and black people. And we have the tapes. The tapes tell the complete story. He admitted all of this in the tapes that he took of his intimate conversations in the White House. His associates, Haldeman and Ehrlichman, have admitted that the war on drugs was aimed at those three groups to destabilize them. And so we are the remaining group. The hippies escaped. You know what I mean? The war protesters became legitimate citizens in America and raised families. But you can't run away from being black. You know, it kind of sticks with you. And so we have been the evil beneficiaries, the beneficiaries of evil, rather, of the war on drugs. And it was all planned that way. Richard Nixon admitted that that was why he did it. Now, then you look at Ronald Reagan. He was even worse. And he spat on us when he declared his presidency in Philadelphia, Mississippi. You want to talk about a dog whistle to the South? That was the place where the three civil rights workers got brutally murdered. And he didn't say a word about them when he declared his presidency. It was a kind of f*** you gesture aimed at the black community. And we saw it, we heard it. But, you know, he could talk the talk. He had that head wag and that beautiful voice. And he acted his way through the 8 years he was president and created even more regression. The war on drugs against us got worse. Mass incarceration got worse. And then Bill Clinton came along. And he was a real disappointment. And he's admitted that his contribution to the war on drugs was completely wrong. Now, I'm a Hillary supporter because I think she's got the best chance of winning in the general election. And I think she knows the evil of the Republican Party better than anyone because she had to live through it. She knows every dirty trick they play. She knows the exact level of immorality of their playbook. And so I'm voting for her. Now, I like Bernie, too. I don't think Bernie's electable, but I think Hillary is, and Hillary can beat either of the evil ones that look like they're going to emerge out of this wreck that used to be called the Republican Party.
What question am I not asking? What's the question I should be asking you?
Well, one of the things that got me involved with this group of people is their extraordinary commitment to legalizing marijuana. And in doing so, they've come up with much of the evil that has befallen my community, the black community. And they're beginning to get it. They're beginning to understand that this is a broader struggle. It's not just a struggle to get high when you want to. It's not just a struggle to provide cannabis as medicine, but it's a larger struggle for individual liberty and for human rights and for human respect. And that causes this group to intersect with my group. And sometimes it's hard to see. Sometimes my group, which is underrepresented here at this conference, doesn't see the connection. But that's my job. And to the extent that they don't see it, I'm partly to blame.
And you have been listening to KBOO Tuesday News In Depth. That was KBOO's Doug McVeigh speaking with William Murphy Jr., the attorney for Freddie Gray's family, about the first anniversary of Gray's death while in Baltimore police custody in 2015. Stay tuned for Cutie Pock.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. The 29th annual festival will be held this year from July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the basic 4-day pass at early bird prices. More information